not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Hello, and welcome to episode 200 of Public Interest Podcast with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. We're here today with Clyde P. Riddlesbrood, the executive director of Riddlesbrood Touring Theater Company. Mr. Riddlesbrood is the author of Riddlesbrood and the Greatest Brochure in the World. He is a former Army paratrooper and has performed in 5,000 shows in the New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, and Delaware area. Mr. Riddlesbrood is a business development coach for entrepreneurs and is the author of 20 scripts and a director of 35 shows. Clyde, thanks so much for joining us today. How are you doing?
Hello. Yes, I'm doing great today. Thank you so much.
Wonderful. The first question I'd like to pose to you is, what are you currently doing or what have you ever done to advance the public?
Well, I mean, you know, we have a couple different things that we do. Currently, and I guess part of what I'll be talking about today, is how we're trying to build a set of awareness among the population about just, you know, how political correctness to some degree is making it more difficult for comedians and humorists all around the country to really entertain people because there's so many rules and so many difficulties there. So we really are an advocate for people having a little bit more of a thicker skin so that they can really be entertained and have a great time. Other than that, we also do have an Arts on the Move program, which is geared for children and teens all around the New Jersey, New York area. And we perform several shows a year where we include a lot of local community children and put them up in a show, and it teaches them confidence building and things like that, and how acting can help them in their life pursuits.
Interesting. How do you find these children? And I guess, is it kind of like a pro bono camp for these? Are they kids whose families are below a certain income threshold, or is there any kind of, how do you find these children?
Well, most of the children that we find are people that are local to the areas where the venue that we're going to do the show is. We perform pretty regularly in the Lakewood-Toms River area of New Jersey, and a lot of the kids that we've got over the years tend to be from those areas, you know, people that can drive to the area pretty quickly. So, you know, anything within about maybe a 45-minute radius of that area. We also are working with the Camden County College and the Main Street Association, Main Stage Association in Blackwood, New Jersey. And we do some regular shows with them as well.
So you have a touring theater company. And in fact, you come from a family of thespians.
Yeah.
Would you mind speaking to our listeners about how it is you came into this business, and from there we'll evolve about what you're doing with it?
Sure. Well, I did grow up in it. My mother is a jazz musician, and in her younger days she was also a kind of a top 40 entertainer, singer, lounge singer kind of person. And so she was very, you know, in the entertainment scene. I spent a lot of time as a young kid waiting in a booth at the back of a bar waiting for her set to end so we could go home. So I definitely grew up there in that kind of area. Also, my father also owned a dinner theater in South Jersey for a long, long time. So I grew up being involved in those shows, and he also did some touring shows. And I was always conscripted into helping him set up lighting and sound, and sometimes even being involved as an actor as a kid. So I definitely spent my whole youth, you know, working in the entertainment industry, which was a lot of fun, you know, for a kid. And then I went in the military for a couple years. I was in the Army for about 4 years, in the early 90s. And then I got out and went to college. So I didn't really start the Riddlesbrood Touring Theater Company until 99-2000.
It's interesting. So you ended up, you know, exploring some other career paths separate from what your parents had done growing up, and you ended up returning to the entertainment industry. Clearly something in the entertainment industry resonated with you. What is it that brought you back?
Well, I'll be honest. There's just, you get the bug, and it's just when you're out there on stage, and you can feel the energy coming off the audience, and you're getting laughs, and people are excited, and you're getting people laughing, you really are kind of like a programmer for the mind of the audience. You know, they come into the room maybe a little upset, maybe a little depressed, maybe a little downtrodden from the day, and at the end of the night, you have been able to change their mindset and make them excited and happy and enthusiastic. And there's a real rush to that. You know, it's very, very intoxicating to do that every night. And, you know, when you try to walk away from it, you miss it. And that's what kept me here.
So having an impact on others' emotions and state of being gives you a rush, and it's you reprogram the audience. And how does comedy achieve that?
Well, the biggest thing about comedy is it's almost like a layer below the rational intellect. You know, if you really want to delve deeply into this, you know, I'm no psychiatrist, but, you know, it's one thing to have a conversation with somebody or a debate. But when you're up on stage, people buy into the show. They see the actors. It's an experience. They're actually participating and really kind of dipped into the experience as opposed to reading it through the rational mind. So when they're sitting in the audience and you're telling jokes and telling stories, and when they laugh, they are reacting in a visceral, emotional way to the content. Sometimes even laughing at things that they might otherwise have said, oh, you know, maybe I shouldn't laugh at that. So it's a very honest form of communication. You know, they're getting that information and they're getting that content in a way that rouses them emotionally and is pretty undeniable. And that is probably the main reason why live entertainment in this age of television, video, YouTube is still alive, because you can't get that kind of experience anywhere else.
So what's the difference between somebody going to a dinner theater in person in the New Jersey area to see the Riddlesford Touring Theater and then watching a comedy show on HBO, for instance?
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. And of course, you know, you can watch, you know, Eddie Murphy live on TV, and I'm sure you're going to laugh and you're going to think it's a lot of fun. But when you're actually there, when you're actually able to almost reach out and touch that performer, you know, there is a certain type of energy that you can feel that is just palpable. You experience the content not just coming into your ears, you know, as audio, but you actually experience it in almost like a psychic way, I would say. You know, if your listeners aren't really into that kind of thing, I technically really do believe that there is some kind of energy that people are getting when you're right there close to somebody and you're wrapped up in the experience, you know, mind, body, everything. Whereas if you're just watching it on TV, I don't know, the experience is somehow shallow. It's clipped somehow. It's just not the same.
So, in speaking about communication, you've become a communication expert, giving speeches helping with business development for different individuals on communication topics. You mentioned you have a book about storytelling, and you described acting as a study of presence and personal magnetism, tonality, pitch, vocal volume, and nonverbal communication. Can you speak a little bit about how you came to learn these skills and what these skills really mean and what they convey through the acting process?
Well, if you're an entrepreneur today or a salesperson or even like in a small company and you're exposed to the public a lot, your success depends a great deal on your ability to communicate with customers or communicate with other important influencers in your industry. And if you lack basic presence, if you have a hard time public speaking, or if you have a difficulty putting your ideas in succinct English language that people can understand and interpret quickly, you find yourself at a very big disadvantage. So So that is kind of why acting 101 is not just a skill for getting up on stage and making people laugh or just entertaining people. It can be a very, very powerful school for the average entrepreneur or business person to really learn how to control their abilities as a human so that they can better persuade people, better make them aware of what their mission is and why their mission is important. So controlling your voice, controlling your body movements, controlling your facial expressions, all these things are extremely valuable if you have them in the workplace.
What does it mean to have a stage presence?
Well, you know what? It's a little bit, it almost kind of gets into a little bit of a metaphysical thing. But if I had to drive it down to a couple specific points, I would say presence would really be a combination of your physical posture, like how you present yourself, how you stand there. So everybody's had somebody where maybe you meet somebody for the first time and they walk up to you, maybe their shoulders are slouched, their head's kind of down, their eyes aren't making eye contact with you, their voice is a little quiet, you know, they seem to be a little confused as to what they're saying. That really kind of comes off as weakness and inspires very little confidence in the person that they're engaging with. On the other hand, if you meet somebody and they're staring you right in the eye and they seem to have an upright posture, they're strong, their voice is very, very strong and powerful and clear, and everything is stressed properly, and, you know, they shake your hand, they give you a nice strong handshake, you're going to feel like, boy, this person is a professional. This person certainly has control of themselves and maybe even control the situation. These are nonverbal types of communication that can really set the tone for any conversation that's going to take place. I would say that's probably the biggest components of personal magnetism.
Interesting. Personal magnetism, having posture, eye contact, a loud voice projected clearly, clarity in thought. And then if you're not on a stage, but you're practicing these in off the stage and in life, a strong handshake, and you're projecting control of the situation. So
it's a mindset, probably a mindset too.
And a mindset. So you're using these elements to include the audience in this experience, and you're hoping that they. And what are you? What is your goal in including them in this experience? You said your goal is to entertain them and also to improve their mood, or you said to make them leave their worries at the door. What is it you were saying your goal was when they walk in the door?
Well, as far as the Riddlesbrood Touring Theater Company and our murder mystery dinner theater style shows are concerned, when a client hires us to come into their group and entertain them, that mission is really they want to have a good time. They want people to have a wonderful experience. And in order to do that, you never know exactly how these people are coming into the show. You know, they may have had a long drive. Maybe they had a hard day. Maybe it was raining. They couldn't find a parking spot. You never know how these individuals are going to approach the show before they sit down. But at the end of the day, we want them walking away laughing. We want them really to feel that the experience they had and they shared with everybody else in the group was something fun and memorable. So in order to achieve that, you really have to first get them to buy in to the show. So our job really is to make sure that during the process of the show, they buy in, they really like the characters, they really get a kick out of the jokes, and they like the story. And when they leave, they are, I guess, inspirited with a sense of positivity. They feel like, you know what, I'm not really unhappy anymore. You know, I feel kind of happy, you know, especially if they've had a drink or two. They walk away feeling with a sense of maybe strengthened confidence, even though they might not be able to put their finger on exactly why. So we want them to leave in a better mental state than when they arrive.
So, Clyde, you mentioned that you tell jokes during these dinner theater hours. And at the beginning of this episode, you spoke about political correctness. alluded to free speech. Elsewhere, you've noted the correlation or relationship between microaggressions and comedy, hypocrisy and comedy. What are you thinking of when you're trying to create these jokes? Are you worried about how people are going to react? Are you trying to what is the relationship between, I guess, free speech and the ability to act and make effective jokes? And how does political correctness fit into that picture?
Well, I guess we view political correctness often as the enemy for a couple basic reasons. One is that, you know, if you think of your brain as two pieces, you have your kind of like logical processing part of your brain, but then you have your emotional, you know, maybe even subconscious part of your brain. And what people technically usually find as funny are really kind of formulaic things. They're exaggerating maybe faults in somebody, or exaggerating stereotypes, or maybe they are puns or plays on words, or putting people in awkward situations. So a lot of comedy comes from people expecting something and it doesn't happen. Instead, it happens differently, and that is often interpreted as comedy. So what that means is when you're in a show and people are bought in and they're experiencing the show and they're in that quasi-hypnotic state of just experiencing the entertainment and not critically thinking about it, you'll find that they laugh and respond and smile to things that are hitting those nerve parts, you know, of their brain that are really hitting them there in the heart. But if there are too many rules, and you say, well, you can't say that because it might make fun of somebody that is fat, or you can't make fun of that person because of their gender, or you can't make fun of that person because of their hairstyle. Now, there's more extreme topics and categories, but it all comes down to the same point where it paralyzes the entertainer because you have too many rules that you can't actually be funny that much anymore. Or it becomes so difficult that most people just say, well, that wasn't a very good show because it wasn't funny. But what they don't realize is, well, it couldn't be funny because if you said this, it would offend this person. If you say this, it would offend this person. So that's what it is.
Is it more acceptable to violate rules of political correctness within the paradigm of a performance on stage than it is to outside in the world? Do you follow more rules and leave comedy by the wayside when you're out in the world, or are these rules you live by whether you're on the stage or not?
Well, I mean, you got to realize when we're on stage, we have a mission, and the mission is first to make the client happy, and that it's also important to understand that political correctness is highly relative. So what one group would find offensive, another group would love, and vice versa. So, you know, it's not just that we want to shock and offend people as a matter of course. It really is a situation where what is deemed offensive is very different from demographic to demographic and from show to show. So, you have to kind of be able to determine that.
Mm-hmm. How do you determine what might be offensive to one group versus another? How do you change?
Well, part of it is experience. Part of it is trial and error, you know. Like, for instance, we've done a lot of groups of all different shapes and sizes, and what works in a church, you know, might not work in a general admission drinking crowd where everybody's coming out for a night out. Or what works down the shore when everybody's in a vacation mindset wouldn't necessarily work in a college environment. Or, you know, so you have to kind of have your finger on the pulse of what you feel the makeup and demographic. So, obviously politics can be involved too. So if we're doing a show at, say, a nonprofit for a company party, and their mission at this nonprofit is to feed the poor. So let's just say, theoretically, this is your client. Now, you probably are going to be able to detect pretty quickly that probably 80% of the makeup of this crew is probably going to be fairly liberal. Otherwise, they may not necessarily be involved in a company like that. And also, the mission and the kind of basic virtues of the company tend to go in that liberal way. So we could probably get a lot of laughs by, say, making fun of Trump or making fun of Republicans and things like that, and they will think that's really, really funny. But if you are at another group, say, you know, a group of police or a group of firemen or whatever it may be, they may very well have a very more right-sided political spectrum. So if you started doing that, they're going to hate you very quickly. So instead, you have to make fun of Obama. You got to make fun of, you know, Schumer. You know, you make fun of those kind of things. So, you know, we kind of don't mind who we have to throw under the bus. That's determined by what the audience probably is going to very quickly respond to.
Do you ever make a mistake and need to correct during...
Oh, yeah, you know, sometimes we get it wrong. Sometimes we do get it wrong. But the beginning, the first 15 minutes of every show, you're always kind of hunting and pecking. You know, so you're always kind of saying, all right, you know, let's try this. Does it get a groan or does it get a laugh? So you can kind of, you'd be surprised. As an actor, your antennas are up, and you can detect even the subtlest kind of opinion and a consensus among the audience. And very quickly, you can tweak the show and improv your way through it in a way that's going to be a lot more effective. So, you know, you might do shows that are totally different. And a lot of our shows are really improvisational, so we have the ability to do that.
So you have been spending decades interacting with audiences from different swaths of society. And throughout all this time, as you've just explained, you've been gauging these audiences. You've been reading how they react to things, whether they're groaning or laughing. And simultaneously to you doing the theater business over the last few decades, there have been many changes in society, politically, culturally. Could you reflect for the listening audience to this podcast about what you've seen and how audiences have evolved or changed, if they've become more or less receptive to certain things, if they become more politically correct or less, whether you've found that more groups are just liberal or just conservative with fewer mixed in between, or if politics has become more or less relevant? What have you been seeing in these audiences evolve over the past few decades?
Well, you know, it's very interesting. It's not what you would expect. In some ways, nothing has changed. People still laugh and enjoy the same basic comic formulas that they have always liked and enjoyed. The difference is, I guess you'd have to say, in the higher level. So what it is people will still laugh at a dirty joke, but they might, you know that they're not supposed to laugh at that. So what really winds up happening is you have to determine what you think the rule set for this particular group would be. And also sometimes you can change it. Like sometimes they can't help themselves. And if you're funny enough and the audience starts laughing and responding, what happens is that, you know, they lose that rule set. They lose that inhibition to say things that maybe they wouldn't always do. So in some ways, a comedy show can in some ways strengthen, maybe, you know, some would argue not necessarily in the best way, but they strengthen people's desire to laugh at things that normally society would say one shouldn't laugh at. So it kind of is a release. It's a momentary period of time when a lot of people feel like they can, you know, be more honest and laugh at things that they know they shouldn't laugh at.
So do we need more comedy in society? Do people need to take themselves less seriously?
I definitely think so. I 100% think so. Because at the end of the day, a lot of people, all humans, are really the same. And the other problem is they just want to have a good time. They want to laugh. And unfortunately, political correctness says certain things are off bounds, but they're mired in hypocrisy. Like, I mean, this is an extreme example. You know, if you make fun of somebody's ears being too large, that would be okay. But say making fun of somebody being, I don't know, somebody having your lips too big, well, immediately you're starting to drift into something that would be considered racist, right? Because, you know, certain group, you know, you're not supposed to say that. But if you really analyze it, it's really completely hypocritical because you're basically saying it's okay to exaggerate something except this list of exceptions. Now, as these lists of exceptions grow more and more complicated, people no longer can remember all these massive lists of exceptions. And that is really what begins to come off as offensive. Or it can paralyze the entertainer, so they really lose the ability to make them laugh anymore. They can get up there and tell, you know, really meaningless stories and jokes that nobody cares about, but, you know, it won't, they'll just say it was a bad show. So you're really walking the edge when you get there in front of these audiences day in, day out.
So a final question for you as we approach the end of this podcast. I'd like to ask you to reflect. Suppose you're speaking to audience members at a Riddles Brew touring theater evening show. And just for a minute before the show, be yourself and speak to them about how all your years in working in theater and eliciting laughs has been in the public interest and what you hope to have accomplished, what your legacy will be when you approach the end of your career.
Well, I guess I would hope that after a life of making people happy, and that's really what it is. I mean, it's very rewarding to be able to sit back and know that, you know, millions and millions of people over the years have stood in front of us and laughed and had a great time. You know, that's really good. The other thing would really be is people being honest with themselves and having a little bit of a thicker skin. Being a little bit more tolerant of views that you might not hold, at least for a while. Because, you know, if you can't think what you want to think, and if you aren't allowed to say what you think is true, at the end of the day, truth starts to get hidden. And the more you hide truth, even if it's under good, you know, even if the whole idea of hiding it is with the best of intentions, at the end of the day, truth must come out. And political correctness, for whatever reason they think it was offensive and they needed these rules, the fact of the matter is it's really harming our ability to hear new ideas and experience new things and really kind of get at the truth and heart of a topic. So I would hope that over the years, you know, the American population can become a little bit more tolerant of different viewpoints.
And that has been Clyde P. Riddlesbrood, the executive director of Riddlesbrood Touring Theater Company, the author of Riddlesbrood and the Greatest Brochure in the World, former Army paratrooper and a performer in 5,000 shows in the New York metropolitan area and author of 20 scripts, director of 35 shows. Who speaks about directing dialogue, being about adapting speech to different audiences, adopting a message to different audiences, being somebody who elicits honest reactions, spends a lifetime advancing the public interest by making people happy and encouraging people to be honest with themselves and tolerant of divergent views that they may not themselves subscribe to. And for Clyde, that is what public service is all about, simply making people happy one laugh at a time. So, Clyde, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. It was a great pleasure.
This has been another episode of Public Interest Podcast with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. I'll remind you to subscribe on publicinterestpodcast.com and on iTunes. Leave a review of this podcast on iTunes and listen on Stitcher, SoundCloud, CastBox, Blueberry, Player FM, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube. Should you wish to comment on this episode, you're welcome to leave a voicemail at 240-630-0380. 8-0, and the first 3 minutes of that voicemail may be played in future episodes of Public Interest Podcast. Should you wish to support the podcast, you're welcome to leave a contribution in an amount that you feel comfortable with at publicinterestpodcast.com. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.